conversation in mind. Basically, I was an old Toyota Corolla that had too many miles on it and was losing its resale value. "You've had your moment," he said, shaking his head. "There are only about 2 or 3 girls who can become icons every 10 years, and you couldn't possibly do that. But guess what? You can be a catalog girl now." The words fell out of his mouth so fast and so fluently that I knew this was a speech that he'd pulled out of his files for just such an occasion. This was the "you was over, bitch" lunch. I could tell he'd delivered it dozens of times before to girls who'd had a successful season or 2 or 3, who no one wanted to book for big jobs anymore. I didn't dare say anything, but inside I thought, that's not me. There was something deep down inside, some sort of spark, that knew I wasn't just one of those here today, gone tomorrow models. This wasn't about just a couple of years of modeling for me. I put college aside for this damn business. This modeling thing was something bigger, not just a career, but a destiny, my life's calling. Right then and there, I knew there were bigger things ahead for me. Things that were bigger than even my own modeling career. I didn't know what they were, but I knew they were going to be major. I sat there, silent, nodding like I understood and agreed with everything he said, but wishing that I'd gone ahead and ordered cheesecake. Not to eat it, to smash it in his damn face. Yo, Drake, you know what I mean, right, boo?
After that man told Tyra not to let the door hit her big old butt on her way out, he had the nerve to offer me a job.
Now I saw Mama scanning the table for something to smash in his face. Apparently, since I was now an overweight outcast, they wanted her to take over and manage one of their supermodels. She was heroin addicted and beyond a hot mess, but she was skinny and blonde. So he said, she still had a future.
No, thank you, honey. No, thank you. I did not have the time, interest, or energy to mother some model who was throwing her potentially stratospheric future away by shooting it up her veins. I had my own baby to care for, who had just been disrespected big time to her face. You're a has-been, Tyra, but Mama, we've got someone else who you can get your hands on to make into a major star. What the? Even after all this nonsense, yes, Tyra cried and cried and cried. We did not panic. She was still getting work. It wasn't as much, but she was walking some runways and posing in some magazines. She still had somewhat of a career. Then when we were in Milan for Fashion Week, her Italian agency called me.
"Do you have pen?"
the agent asked in his strong accent.
"I want you write down what I'm saying."
I grabbed a nearby envelope and started jotting down every name that he listed, 8 of the top fashion houses in Italy. "What's this?" I asked.
"All designer, no one to work with Tyra no more."
"Okay, why?"
"Perché she too big,"
he said.
"Mama, she need lose weight. Her career will be finished if she do not." Oh, Lordy, that Milan Fashion Week. I remember it like it was the day before yesterday. And he told her the list was growing. There were 8 designers who did not want to hire me this season. Last season, it had been 4. I had been the it girl, but now I was about to be the out girl, and I'd never rise anywhere near supermodel status. I bet you've been in a situation like this at some point in your life. Maybe you were the metaphorical it girl or it guy at your job or in your relationship, then all of a sudden you ain't getting that promotion or the love of your life says they want to take a break. Now, no matter how solid you thought your self-esteem was, it's really looking more like Swiss cheese, one of those big mouse-baiting cartoon chunks all full of holes. We all know that we shouldn't care too much what other people think of us and that we shouldn't rely on external validation, but damn, in these moments, that's hard. You'd have to be stone cold to weather these kinds of blows and not let them affect you. And you're getting to know me more and more and more with each moment as you listen to this book. So as you know now, I was not stone cold. Mama showed me the list in our tiny hotel room in Milan as I was sitting on the bed. These were some of my favorite clients, people who had snapped me up when I first got to Europe. But now they were turning their noses up like I stank like French blue cheese, and they didn't want anything to do with me. I knew that list was only going to grow as my body grew. I saw my whole career flash before my eyes. What the hell was I going to do now? I pictured myself selling jacuzzis. Just look at those jets. Have you ever seen such powerful jets on a tub? Or spritzing perfume on unsuspecting shoppers at the mall? I burst into tears. I wanted to keep modeling. I was kind of desperate. I'd lose weight. I'd try anything. Mommy, okay, I cried. I'm going to skip meals, and I won't eat that much. I can get a trainer. I'll work out in the morning and at night. I'll count calories so I know exactly how much I'm taking in. And then I'll hit the sidewalk in Paris and in New York and in Milan, and I'll run 5 miles before bedtime every night. Mama put her arms up to come in for a hug. Or so I thought. Instead, she grabbed my shoulders and shook me like salad dressing.
Stop it,
she shouted, her face so close to mine that I could feel her breath on my false eyelashes.
This is nothing to cry about, Miss Tyra. I work like hell to get here, Banks.
Huh?
You know what we're gonna do?
What? I sniffled.
We're gonna go eat pizza.
Then she ripped that list into confetti and threw it in the air.
Once that pizza was on the table, steaming hot with all those little pools of mozzarella cheese and shreds of fragrant, fresh basil. That was when I started challenging Tyra. What can you do if you want to stay in this industry? Where do you see this kind of body? Bodies like yours. Instead of changing it, what can you do to use what you have? If the straight line is no longer the option, what happens if you turn, pivot? When you look to the right and to the left, what do you see? Now, let me tell you, I did not want Tyra to fall into the trap of thinking she had to live up to some silly idea of the perfect body. I'd seen that my whole life. Women stretching, sweating, and starving themselves to get into a shape that their body ain't never supposed to be in the first place. Tyra was almost a supermodel. And if she was too fat, what message did that send to the rest of us normal-ass women? Those of us who aren't 6 feet tall, who have curves in all the wrong places. I was so damn sick of hearing that women's bodies should be this, that, or the other, but never loved and embraced for what they are. I want women to feel like their bodies and booties are beautiful. I couldn't preach it to the world, but I could start with my daughter.
When she said pizza, my first thought was crazy. Then she started walking. Actually, it was more like marching. I followed like I was in boot camp, and we found ourselves at our favorite pizzeria. It was actually a focacceria on Corso Magenta. I can almost taste that divine cheese now as I say this. As soon as I smelled the smoke drifting out from that wood-fired oven, I started to calm down. We sat at our usual table in the corner by the window where we could watch all the people coming in, the families and couples just getting off work. Mama took out a pen and handed it to me. As soon as we ordered, she gestured at the tabletop, which was covered in white butcher paper.
Now,
she said,
you are going to write down every client in this industry that likes ass.
Ass?
Yes, that likes your ass.
What do you mean? I asked, still thinking she was crazy.
Who likes ass?
She demanded. Victoria's Secret?
Write it down.
Sports Illustrated?
Write it down.
I was starting to catch on. Middle America! I wrote it down.
Who has an ass?
She asked. Cindy Crawford!
Write it down.
Claudia Schiffer!
Write it down.
I wrote it down. By the time we'd finished our pizza, I had a whole list of commercial clients who booked the bold and bootyful, and a list of models who had curves and were working and at the top of their game, past and present. I sat back and looked at that list, now mottled with grease stains and dots of tomato sauce, and I slowly started to smile. My career didn't have to be over. It just had to be different. Mama had always called the fashion elite those bosses in black, because while I worked with many wonderful, warm, and nurturing modeling agents and designers and magazine editors and other powers that be, who I'm still friends with today, there were just as many who lived up to the stereotypes. They never cracked a smile, gave out a hug, or wore anything that resembled a color. Those were the power people Mama did not want getting to me. Now Mama sat back and crossed her arms. She was smiling, too.
I will be damned if my baby starves for these B.I.B.s.
I ripped the paper off the pizza table and took it back to our hotel.
I sent a fax to the agency, and they called me back almost as soon as it went through.
Carolyn, what the heck is this list?
Those are her new clients.
Tyra is a high-fashion model,
they said.
She walks for Armani and Chanel. None of these clients you faxed are high fashion.
Well, she ain't high fashion anymore, I said. She ain't starving. She's changing.
That is not the path for a black girl,
they said.
It doesn't exist.
To be honest, that made me so mad I can't even remember exactly what I said next. But I'm sure it wasn't very nice.
As angry as I was with the USA agent who had told me I was over, there was a grain of truth to it. True, it was my booty that got me booted from the world of high fashion earlier than I would have liked, but said booting was inevitable. I worked in a cold industry that was unapologetic in how it embraced the new and next and put the old out to pasture. In my case, at the ripe old age of 22. At first, I was depressed to have to say sayonara to couture, but the more resistant the agency was, the more convinced I became that a girl next door path was my path. That modeling for the masses was what I was supposed to be doing. You just need to lose some weight and you can be the next Iman, the next Linda, they pleaded. You are not a curvy girl, really. Just lose the weight and it's too soon for you to go commercial. You'll never work in high fashion again. I don't want to be high fashion anymore, I said. I'm bubbly like Christie Brinkley. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't party, and neither does Cindy Crawford. I'm not exotic, damn it. I'm the girl next door. I'm perfect for Victoria's Secret, just like Stephanie Seymour. Victoria's Secret wasn't going to book me, the agent said, because the girl next door was blonde, baby, not black. At that moment, I had flashbacks to that secretary. Sat desk salad all stuck in her teeth, telling my brown skin it had better learn to type. Just call me Josephine Banks-er. See what I did there? My introduction to Paris was, shall I say, shock and surprise. I was embraced in France as I never was in the United States. Paris didn't make me feel like I couldn't do something just because I was black. Wee, wee, wee is what I heard almost everywhere I went. But as soon as I landed in New York City, all I heard was, no, 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 just like the Destiny's Child song. What up, B? Every day of my career, I'd have someone telling me what black girls could and could not do. It was like they were reading it out of the Bible because they often said it like it was gospel. Black girls don't book for winter collection fashion shows because they look better in summer swimsuits. Black girls aren't going to get major advertising campaigns. Black girls don't book magazine covers. Black girls don't get cosmetics contracts. I was so sick, so friggin' sick and tired of always hearing about all the things that black girls could not do. I'd been on magazine covers, and I already had a contract with CoverGirl. I'd proved them wrong before. I could do it again. Get me a go-see with Victoria's Secret, I said to my agent. Brad, Chad, and Todd. I see you looking. I started to notice men checking me out right around the time I started to sprout boobs. I know, shocking, right? But it was always the chocolate brothers who'd do the full-on stop and stare. Every once in a while, I'd catch a white guy looking out the corner of his eye, but if he ever knew that I knew he was looking, he turned away super quick and pretended to be really into comparison shopping for the kitty litter, the lawn chairs, or whatever else was in the aisle he just happened to be standing in at Target. And not I just got caught checking out a woman guilty, but I just got caught checking out a black woman guilty. If the white guys in America had been conditioned to not think that black women were beautiful, the Europeans, child, they knew no such thing. Bonjour, mademoiselle, une belle fille, très jolie, I'd hear on the streets in France. In Italy, mama got it too. Donna bella mama, they'd catcall.
Why are these Italian men trying to talk to me?
She'd ask as she sipped her blood orange juice sitting outside the pensione in Milan.
All belladonna this and belladonna that?
It was not what we were used to back home. Then, after Victoria's Secret and Sports Illustrated, that started to change. I had just as many white guys lining up at my signings, blondes and redheads coming up to tell me they had my poster in their dorm room or had saved all my magazine covers. White women would come up in the mall and ask if they could get a photo. My sons are such fans. They just love you, Tyra. Huh? Your American sons? It wasn't like I was itching to get hollered at. Any female who has ever walked down the street in New York knows how annoying and sometimes even frightening that gets, or that I needed the validation. It's just that after a while, I started to think that maybe something bigger was happening. Maybe the taboos about being attracted to other races were starting to be broken. Men of all races could look at a black woman and instead of immediately thinking, not my type, or that is my type, but not going to share that desire with the world, think, yeah, I kind of like that. Maybe there's a white, Asian, Latino, Native American man out there right now who met his wife when he saw a beautiful black girl across the bar at Chili's in the Dallas airport or on Match.com or sitting next to him in an economics class and thought, whatever, Todd, just go for it. Ask her out. The worst thing she's going to do is say no.
And well, what do you know? Victoria's Secret up and booked my black baby girl.
My first day on set, I was so excited. I kept telling myself, you're at Victoria's Secret. The pizza butcher paper plan worked. You're at Victoria's Secret, Ty Ty. I got my makeup done, and it looked okay. Decent. Everyone was nice. They seemed excited I was there. Everything was going really well. Then I sat down for hair. Now, if you know anything about African-American hair, now's the time to hold your breath and pray for me. Okay, inhale and hold. It took me about 15 seconds to realize that this guy had no idea what to do with my hair, my black girl hair. He was clueless. Straight, pun intended, clueless. He'd brush a spot, stand back and look, then dart in and brush another spot. He was a mother bird building a nest with anything he could find lying around. A little bit of hairspray, a couple of squirts of mousse, yikes, some water-based gel, double yikes, brushing again, the curling iron, the flat iron, the blow dryer, the diffuser, water, triple yikes. I knew I was in trouble when he doused my hairline with that water and brought out the curling iron to curl it up. Wet. I sat there with a smile plastered so hard on my face I felt like my cheeks were cracking. It'll be okay, I told myself. Trust him. He wouldn't be here if he didn't know what he was doing. Except that he clearly didn't. And I looked a hot mess. Finally, I took a deep breath and made one last attempt to calm the panic that was seeping into my veins. Maybe you're just being paranoid, I told myself, and they want your hair to look like you just survived a tsunami. Yeah, maybe that's the look they're going for. This hairdo is kind of sexy in a damsel in distress sort of way. Except as soon as I stepped foot on set, I knew it wasn't just me who thought I looked cray-cray. The photographer's reaction was written all over his face, and it just said, ew. The art director and stylist wouldn't make eye contact with me. After just a few shots, this is hard for me to say, I got sent home. Modeling is all about rejection, and you learn to not take it too personally. But this This was different. I felt utterly destroyed. My fabulously fantastic future had flashed before my eyes, and I liked what I'd seen. Then just as quickly, it was yanked away. I felt like a bride left at the altar, standing there all done up in a white dress while her ex-groom-to-be zooms by with a wavy-haired, weaveless brunette on his arm and yells, "We going to Disneyland, biatch!" To say I was crushed is an understatement. I was eviscerated. At this point in my career, I was a pro. I knew not to take every rejection personally, and I understood that not every model was going to be right for every client. There had to be some synergy there where you get together and boom, everything falls precisely into place. You're happy, the client elated, and the pictures come out absolutely positively friggin' fantastic. You couldn't expect that to happen every single time you stepped on set. Except this wasn't just any set. This wasn't just any client. This was Victoria's friggin' secret. My previous season for New York Fashion Week, I'd only booked 5 shows. And I used to do 25. So as you can see, I had a hell of a lot riding on this. My sent-home self went home in a daze. What about my destiny? It was really over? Just like that? Over the next year, I booked some jobs. People in the industry still knew who I was, and I still had a name. Sorta. No one was talking about what I had just done, was gonna do next, or how huge I was gonna be. I'd go to Mama and cry and beg. "You have to do something," I'd plead with her. "Call the agency and tell them to call Victoria's Secret back. I need another chance." Mama would listen and make all sorts of comforting murmurs like,
"Uh-huh, baby. I know. I know."
"So you'll call them then?" I'd ask, hopeful, as soon as she finished hearing me out.
"Hell no. You call them." Now, I love my baby girl, and I'll always have her back in whatever she does, but does that mean I'm going to fight her battles for her? Like I told her that day, hell to the no.
The first 100 times we had that hell no type of conversation, I thought Mama was just being scared. She was too much of a coward to call the agency and make my demands. Then it finally dawned on me one day. Carolyn London ain't never been no coward, and she wasn't being one now. She just literally wanted me to do it myself. Oh, Lord. Fight my own battles? There's no way I can do that. I need my mama. And to my surprise, she was there for me. She dialed the agency's number, yay, and then did the unthinkable. She threw the phone in my lap, ran out the room, and slammed the door. What the? At the closing of that door, my agent answered the phone. Damn it! I started to sweat. My shaky hands and I hung the phone up in her face. Now the phone was just staring at me, and I can feel my mom staring at me through the door. Mama wanted me to woman up. She would never throw me under the bus, but until I got the message, she'd throw me out of the bus over and over again. I just had to duck and roll and hope she threw me out near a Haagen-Dazs. So, I picked up the phone. You have to get me another shot with, Victoria's Secret. I stammered. I know I'm right for them. I just need another shot. My confidence was growing with each and every word. Tyra, it's over with you and VS. They sent you home. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't my fault, I said through tears. Fine, babe. I'll call them. Don't hold your breath. She called me back in a week. Victoria's Secret had listened to whatever the heck she told them. I had one more chance. Immediately, I busted into Eye of the Tiger mode. I was going to train hard as and knock them out. I knew what I needed to do, and it was all about my body. And I'm not talking about my abs, my arms, and my legs. I'm talking about the right kind of body that I needed on top of my head, my hair. That night before the comeback shoot, I had my trusty hairstylist, Oscar James. Hi, Oscar. I love you so much. He came to my apartment to do my do. He conditioned my hair, flat ironed it, and styled it. Then I wrapped it up as carefully as I could in a satin scarf, like my head was a fragile Fabergé egg. I barely slept, making sure every hour on the hour, my scarf was still on my head. Think Regina King in the opening scene of that flick that we all love, Friday. The next morning, I walked on that Victoria's Secret set, whipped my scarf off, and was ready to go. My hair was did, so I just waved a hello to the hairstylist on set and stayed as far away from him as possible, and all I needed was makeup. I sat down in the chair. Then as soon as the artist was finished, I excused myself. Oh, that fake tummy ache worked like a charm. And I scooted off to the bathroom where I redid my entire face myself. I drew in my eyebrows closer together. I dabbed just the right amount of shimmer on my cheeks, added more concealer to my natural raccoon-looking eyes, and sculpted my contour like my life depended on it. My life didn't, but my career sure did. I added a final dab of lip gloss to the center of my bottom lip and scooted back to the set. Everything okay, they asked? Yep, I said. Everything's great. Your lips really pop beautifully under the lights, the stylist said. I gave her a wink. That gleam right there was my future, shining bright.
After that, Victoria's Secret didn't just book my black girl. They gave her a 10-year contract and put their first black girl on the cover of the catalog. And that was just the first. There were more to come. Bam! First Victoria's Secret Swimsuit Edition cover girl. Bam! Original Angel. Bam! First black angel. Bam! First black model with a Victoria's Secret contract. Bam! First black model to wear the Victoria's Secret fantasy bra. Bam! First black model to wear the fantasy bra again. Double bam! Damn! It wasn't too long after that when her Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue came whipping around the corner and damn near blew me away. Those black model barriers that had always existed, well, it was like they were made of baby back ribs and barbecue chicken, 'cause Tyra straight devoured them.
Many years later, when Sports Illustrated celebrated 50 years of the swimsuit issue with a televised special on NBC, my itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny red polka dot bikini from 1997 and I were honored with the title of third best cover of all time. It was a fancy award show type of thing, televised for the world to see. And when they ranked me number 3, I was supposed to walk on the stage and give a speech like they do at the Oscars. Shoot, the ceremony was in the same theater where they shoot the Academy Awards, so I was nervous as I approached the stage. I didn't have anything planned, and there was no speech tucked into my push-up bra, so I just got up there and said what came to mind and spoke from the heart, just like I'd done all those years before when I talked about Vanessa Williams and what it meant to me as a young black girl to see a black woman be crowned Miss America. A lot of the women here say it was their dream, I said. But it wasn't my dream, because I didn't think it was possible. And I didn't think it was possible because of the color of my skin. I want to thank Sports Illustrated for thinking different, and I say different without an L-Y, for being daring and for making every little black girl that year that saw that issue go, "Oh my God, Mama, I think I'm pretty because a black girl's on the cover just like me." I stand here representing everybody with a dream to know that if you have a dream and you have tunnel vision, it can come true. But remember to dream bigger, because if you do, those things can be reached too. I was so touched by the recognition, and the next day I posted on social media about the experience and what I'd said. The reactions I got were 180 degrees different. Most black people were front and center, cheering me on. "Wow, girl, you did it." Or, "I remember where I was when I first saw that cover." Or, "My son had it on his wall for 10 years. Other races of the rainbow were clapping too, but some were kind of rolling their eyes. You know you can always tell when an Instagram comment was written with an eye roll. Stuff like, why you gotta bring race into it? Nobody thinks like that anymore. And some even typed stuff like, get over it. At first, when I read those comments, it really upset me. There were serious issues and obstacles, challenges and struggles that I went through as a black model every single day of my career. And I wanted to acknowledge that. Not just for myself, but also for all the other black models who had been made to feel less than, who'd been told over and over again that they weren't as beautiful and as valued, told countless times that a black model's place was in the back of the issue, but never front and center. I'd been through fashion hell and back, stuff I haven't even covered in this book. Book two, maybe? But I went through hell to get to where I was, and I wasn't the only one. And now some people were looking at me like I tripped in my heels and landed on the most coveted cover in the world? Were they truly that blind? Then I thought about it some more. Could there perhaps be a silver lining to this cloud of ignorance? Just as an aside, ignorant does not mean stupid. It means lack of knowledge or awareness. Look it up. A lot of the people making those comments were from a generation that had grown up seeing black models on Instagram looking like their lives and careers were easy, stress-free, and equal. Maybe they didn't see Jordan Dunn, Joan Smalls, Chanel Iman, my top model girl Winnie Harlow, or the Jasmines, Jasmine Tooks, and Jasmine Golden Barbie Sanders and think, there's a black model. Maybe they just saw those and other successful, beautiful black girls traveling the world, smizing up the red carpet, and owning the runway and thought, there's a model. There's a positive and negative to this. Yes, we are moving in the right direction for many people to see past the skin color of a model they love, but we can't forget what it took to get here or diminish the fact that black models still struggle a hell of a lot. You only have to read their long, heartfelt Instagram captions about dealing with incompetent hairdressers to get a sense of what they're dealing with. I'm so glad they now have a voice to speak up about these kinds of ongoing issues. Young people today might not think race and fashion is a big deal, but there are still plenty of bosses in black and board members in suits who do. And sadly, they are usually the ones in control of the covers, contracts, and campaigns and checks. And straight up, I do not think I would have been able to make such a broad impact if I had stayed in high fashion. When I was first told to lose weight, a lot of weight, it felt like my world was ending. This was the first major pain point in my career. Well, not the first. I'll save that living hell for another book. But thank God I had Mama there to help me pivot and go in a new direction. When one door of opportunity slams shut in your face, you don't turn around and go home, boo. Oh, no, no, no. You just go through that side door. And if that's closed, go through the back door, the cellar door, the attic. Just get in the damn house. Success is not a straight line. It's more like the PCH. That's the Pacific Coast Highway for you peeps who are not familiar with the Los Angeles coast. There are all sorts of curves and switchbacks and roadblocks and traffic jams and high cliffs and fallen rocks, and you'll fall right into the Pacific Ocean if you're too busy staring at the scenery to drive. The important thing is to keep your eyes on the road and keep going. Stay focused. Don't stop. Don't turn back. And don't forget to enjoy the wild ride. I believe in destiny, but too many people treat destiny like it's the po-po locking them up. And let me explain that for you. We all know those people who just give up as soon as something gets hard. Well, I guess that wasn't in the stars, in the cards, meant to be, my path. So I guess I'll just stop trying. They'd rather tell themselves that losing is their destiny and success is out of their control. Wrong. Where is that America's Got Talent red buzzer when I need it? I learned that from watching, drum roll please, my own motherfriggin' mama. There were many ways in which my mother was a victim. She went through abusive relationships. She got taken advantage of. She got pregnant young. She was discriminated against. She was poor. She was black. She had no college degree. She was female. The list goes on. But did she ever think of herself as a victim? Not for a damn second. If there was a Miss I Control My Destiny pageant, Miss Carolyn would have done a mind-blowing dance in the talent contest, had you rolling on the floor laughing your ass off with the I can't believe she just said that stuff that she went ahead and actually said in the interview, and played the body accordion in the swimsuit competition. She would have won by miles and then never given up that crown, no matter what happened to her. Because she refused to accept it as her fate, and she refused to let it define who she was.
You know, it's easy to say, woe is me, and go back to bed. It's comfortable and cozy in those flannel sheets, where you can just blame other people for everything that's gone wrong in your life. It's a whole lot harder to get up and fight when life's drama stares you in the face. Did you hear what I said? Drama. Not trauma. Trauma is an uncontrollable circumstance that happens to you and requires therapy, counseling, and medical or psychological treatment. Drama is an excuse.
And me and Mama, we ain't the kind of girls who make excuses. So when destiny starts to push at you, that is your sign to push back at it. You push back and you show that bitch who's boss. Take off your earrings and get your girl to hold your purse if that's what you gotta do, because you ain't gonna go down without a fight. And know that no matter what, you at least got two people in your corner backing you up, me and Mama. And we know when to come out swinging. If a door slams in your face, we'll tell you to look for the window. If the window's shut, well then, boo, you got elbows, don't you? Break that ish. Climb, crawl, leapfrog, high jump, pole vault, catapult. Do whatever you gotta do to get and stay where you need to be. And if you get a few scrapes and bruises along the way, cherish them. Those are your battle scars. They show that you put in some work, rolled with the punches, and learned a whole hell of a lot along the way. Now go get 'em, Tigers. And that's spelled T-Y-G-E-R-S. Though if there are any little girls or boys out there planning to do a speech on me, can I give you a word of advice? Write it down. That stuff is hard to remember. Actually, forget that script and speak from your fierce heart. And don't forget to smize. Chapter 4. Ain't no party like a period party.
I was so naive, so very naive, about the birds and the bees and the blood. Even when I was pregnant with a baby growing in my belly, I still barely understood how that baby got there. My own mama never taught me about the facts of life, much less the rumors. So I was as in the dark as a vampire bat in a cave at midnight. It wasn't like things are now, where you can just Google anything and everything. So if you didn't get information from your parents, there weren't that many other legit places you were going to get it. Sex education at school was clinical and brief, and crammed into one day where the girls and boys were split up. Who knew what they taught the boys? For that matter, who knew what they taught the girls? I certainly didn't. I had the flu that day and missed it all. Every last bit of it. I knew there was such a thing as a period, and that some of my friends had theirs already, but I had no idea what a period was. I didn't know what it looked like, what it felt like, or why it happened. So one day, when my stomach was hurting really bad, and I found blood in my underwear, I immediately burst into tears. I thought I was dying, and probably only had days to live. My mom found me crouched on the stairwell, bawling. Mommy, there's blood in my panties. I'm gonna die. Oh, child, please, she said. That just means you're a woman now. What? Let me get you some Kotex.
Some Kahoo?
Back in those days, pads were about the size of a diaper, and you wore them attached to a sort of a belt that went around your waist and had these metal clampy things in the front and the back. Mommy showed me how to put it on and then handed me a stack of pads. Make sure you change it regularly, she said, or you start to smell. And that was the end of that lesson. I was a woman now, with no idea what the hell was going on. Was I gonna die soon? I still felt like I was. I didn't even know that having my period meant that now I could also have a baby. I was left to fend for myself, and I didn't fend very well. When I got pregnant, my prior sexual experience consisted of some poking, prodding, pushing, and pain, but never any pleasure. I had met this older Navy man who was cocky and intense and intimidated the hell out of me. He knew what he was doing, but me? I wasn't a virgin. I'd had sex once before and didn't know what was happening except for a lot of ouch. But I was still clueless as a kitten. This went here, that went there. He moved around, and yep, we made a baby. At that time, being pregnant without a husband was an extremely shameful thing. And my parents were, you guessed it right, extremely upset. At their urging, I called the one telephone number I had for Mr. Navy. His mother answered the phone, and I told her the news. Honey, she said, that's your problem. And then she hung up. I was shocked, then numb, then crushed. Then feelings of worthlessness flooded in. Her abrupt dismissal of me and the baby growing inside me made me feel like I wasn't a person, but merely a thing. Actually, two worthless things she needed to protect her son from. I never wanted anything like that to happen to Tyra, ever. So when her Aunt Flo came calling, I wasn't going to just spill the beans. I was going to add ketchup, mustard, brown sugar, molasses, onions, and bacon to them beans. That analogy makes odd sense, but I thought I'd sneak in my recipe for doctoring up canned baked beans. They're so good, they'll make you want to slap your mama. But you better not. What I'm trying to say is, I was going to tell Tyra a hell of a lot more than, you're a woman now. Embarrassment and awkwardness? Come on. Y'all two are invited to the lesson, 'cause Miss Tyra is going to know every damn bloody thing.
All my friends were getting their periods, but me? I didn't get mine until I was 15. Even in my mature state, though, it was still friggin' awful. I started to freak out as soon as I realized I was bleeding. Why? Because I was at my daddy's house, and I desperately did not want him to know. I called Ma, and I told her that she needed to come get me now. And I told her that under no circumstances was she to tell my dad why. Please, Ma, please. Don't tell Daddy.
I told him. I didn't want to look like some crazy ex-wife showing up to drag our daughter off with no explanation.
Oh, my God. She told him behind my back. I was devastated.
You're probably just spotting, he said on the phone to me an hour later.
I wanted to die. Die. For one, spotting? How the hell did he even know what that was? And two, he wasn't supposed to know. Damn you, Mama! To this day, my dad still talks to me like I'm a little girl.
Buster, Daddy loves you.
And he does it all sing-songy like he's some character on Sesame Street. So at the time, it mortified me to think I'd become a real woman under his roof when I knew he still felt and treated me like I still watched Big Bird. I'd even lied for 4 years and said I believed in Santa Claus after knowing it was my parents leaving Barbie camper vans and Holly Hobby ovens under the Christmas tree. It wasn't that I wanted the extra presents. It was because I saw how much my dad enjoyed it, and I didn't want to take that joy away from him. And the extra ColecoVision video game cartridges like Frogger, Donkey Kong Jr., and Burger Time from Santa didn't hurt. So when I started my period, I think I freaked out because part of me wanted to stay a little girl. His little girl. Forever. Then, of course, Mama threw me this odd, strange, weird, wacky, but kind of beautiful in its own way, celebration.
I had always loved anthropology, the study of humans, not the store, and learning about different cultures and traditions all over the world. One day, I was watching a National Geographic special and saw that in almost every primitive culture, there was a rite of passage ceremony where the women would come together to honor a girl who had started her period and teach her all about it. It was a celebration of womanhood and an acknowledgement of passing into another realm. That got me thinking, what did we do for our women, American women? There was no ceremony, and there certainly was no celebration. All we got was a box of Kotex. That was when it hit me. I'd throw Tyra a period party. And let me tell you, there ain't no period party like a Mama Carolyn period party. Right after I had the idea, I started planning, and when I told Tyra about it, she started giggling and couldn't stop. We invited all the teenage girls she was close to. I told them they didn't have to, but if they wanted, they could bring a gift. After all, this was a celebration, right? Soon I got a call from the mom of one of the girls. "What's this my daughter's talking about?" she asked. "She says she's going to a period party at Tyra's house." I explained the premise, and she laughed so hard she couldn't breathe. She said I was nuts. "You're invited, too," I told her. "No, no, that's okay," she said. "You've got some wacky parenting techniques, but I trust you because Tyra is a good and healthy-minded girl. So you know what? You go right ahead. Is it a potluck? I can send over a dish."
Why did I get my period so late? Because I was so thin. At least that's what my doctor said. Something about me not having enough body fat that stimulates the production of estrogen or something. Anyway, I'd already had my first kiss, which is probably a little backward for most girls. Still, the period party was very special, and from the time I first heard my mama's crazy idea, I couldn't stop laughing. None of my friends could believe Ma was doing this. Once again, they thought I had the craziest, coolest mom in the world. Because I did.
Tyra's favorite color is yellow, so I decorated the house with yellow crepe paper garlands and balloons and set out refreshments. I even had a cake made with yellow frosting and flowers in the exact words my mama had said to me when I got my period. "You're a woman now." When I went to pick up the cake, the lady at the bakery asked what occasion the "woman now" cake was for. "Oh, it's for my daughter's period party," I said. "Huh? What does that mean?" I broke down the whole idea, and her jaw dropped. "A what for what?" she asked, shocked. "Why would anyone want to celebrate something so horrible?" Now I knew I was on the right track. I didn't want my daughter thinking that this thing that was happening to her, which is perfectly natural and happened to every woman, was horrible like this lady thought it was. So to rub it in the baker's face, I said, maybe I should have ordered red velvet with ruby-colored cream cheese frosting. The whole point of the period party was to illustrate that becoming a woman is wonderful, not shameful. The female reproductive system has given life to all of us. But so many people scrunch their faces up and treat it like a horror curse. This isn't the prom scene in Carrie. There's nothing to be afraid of. The only pig in the party was the bacon in my famous baked beans.
I do think Ma was overcompensating a wee bit with the whole period party, but who the heck can blame her? Her own mother, my dear grandmama, was so backward with the whole menstruation thing that my mama vowed that my experience would be the complete opposite. But I can't blame my granny for what she told my mama. I bet it was more than her mama told her. Also, seeing me freak out when I got mine at my dad's house, my mama saw firsthand that I already had so much shame connected to becoming a woman and said to herself, "I have to do something before my child goes crazy." I appreciate that she never wanted me to be ashamed of anything or to think that there was something bad or dirty about my body. And to prove that, the period party had all kinds of bells and whistles and, of course, tons of TMI.
Most of the girls at Tyra's period party had started theirs, but I still gave them all the complete breakdown. I wanted them to understand everything, from what the blood means to why it happens once a month and where a tampon goes. I had charts of the female anatomy, and I pointed out every part by its actual name. We all had vulvas and labia, so why should we be too embarrassed to say the real words? Majoris, minoris, and clitorises, oh my! The highlight of the party was when I brought out the period gift basket, which was better than anything you could ever order from 1-800-Flowers. I had gone to the store and gotten one pack of practically everything. Tampons with the applicator, tampons that you could insert manually, panty liners, pads, feminine deodorant spray. Even though I didn't use it, it was in the aisle, so I threw it in. I arranged it all with some bright yellow tissue paper and included some day-of-the-week panties, which completed the ultimate period goodie bag. I took the girls through each and everything in that basket and explained what the items were for and how to use them. I opened up the boxes of tampons and pads so that the girls could touch them and see what they looked like outside the packaging. I talked about how often you need to change tampons to keep toxic shock away, and pads to keep all kind of mess away, and talked about how they'd have to try out different types and brands to decide what was the most comfortable for them. When I was at the store, I specifically looked for the biggest Kotex I could find. If you're worried about having accidents at night, I said as I held it up, this will be your best friend because it goes all the way up to your navel in the front and all the way up your butt crack in the back. This was pre-wings. The girls' reactions to it all were pretty mixed, confused, excited, downright disgusted.
It's like a diaper,
they screamed while passing around the massive pad.
I couldn't even walk 2 feet in that.
In between some of that disgust and embarrassment was a lot of excitement. Most of them had never talked about their period so openly before. And in between the yucks and giggles, they asked questions about everything from whether using tampons takes away your virginity to wanting to know if other people can tell when you're on your period. The highlight of the party, though, was when I brought out the ancient period belt I'd had to wear when I was a teenager. To their young eyes, I'm sure it looked like a torture device. I guess back in the day it kind of was. Thank God, or whoever invented them, for pads with adhesive.
My friends did a love circle for me where they all held hands and danced around me and shouted out beautiful or funny stuff about me.
You're so goofy and fun, Tyra. Bloody Tyra, bloody Tyra, to the tune of Bloody Mary. Last to flow and bleed, but first to help in our times of need.
My fave color, which was forced upon me by my paternal grandma, long story, was on full blast on my cake, so it appeared it was made for Big Bird. We ate every drop of that sunshine bright cake, and I opened the gifts for my buddies, and Ma brought out a basket of feminine products that I was used to just passing by and ignoring in the supermarket aisle. In addition to all the blood collectors, there were feminine douches and all this kind of stuff, and later, my mama apologized big time.
The vagina is a self-cleaning oven. You don't need to flush anything up it unless your doctor says so. I learned that after the party and regret telling Tyra and her friends otherwise. Meanwhile, I caught her staring at the tampons like they were monsters.
Tampons are mysterious little demons. At least that's what I thought, touching one for the first time. How the heck was I supposed to get that rough thing up my you-know-what? Sorry, Ma. I know you want me to use the real V word, but you know what? Just seems a bit easier right now. Anyway, I vowed to never use them. Tampons, that is. Ever. But I'll never forget my future BFF. Maxi pads. Yep, they were in there. Those pads were super thick, like an In-N-Out double-double hamburger. Mama was all excited, going on and on about the innovative, futuristic technology of the sticky stuff on the underside of the pads that miraculously adheres to one's underwear.
And then we danced. All the girls formed a circle, and Tyra got in the middle and shook her booty, even though there wasn't much of it at the time, while we all clapped and sang around her. It was her moment, her day. She was a woman now. And she felt good about it. All the girls left wanting a period party, even if they'd already started, and I started throwing them for all my nieces. Before we even knew what popularity on the internet was, heck, there was no internet back then, my period parties went viral, within our 10-block radius, that is.
I stayed true to my word, and for about a year after I started my period, I said, oh, hell no to tampons. When I was on my period, my purse was like a diaper bag, half full of cottony, super thick maxi pads. But one day, I was at school in class when I ran out of them. Damn. None of my friends used pads, so no one had any. Damn again. One girl slipped a tampon in my hand, and I immediately dropped it and was like, you guessed it, oh, hell no. In the bathroom, I decided to risk scent, dent, and accident, more on that later, and just ball up a bunch of toilet paper that resembled a baseball and stuck it in my underwear. Needless to say, it didn't work, and started to slide around and break down into a mess. I went back to my friend and whispered, okay, give me that tampon. I'm gonna do it. She came with me to the bathroom and stood outside the hall trying to coach me through it. You got this, Ty. But goodness gracious, I could not do it. The tampon just wouldn't budge. Not a bit. My friend then transformed from coach to cheerleader. You can do it. I know you can. Relax and think that tampon's a man. Her rhyming was ridiculous. Even more so because I was a virgin. And to make matters worse, the clock was ticking. This bathroom stall period party was not taking place during lunch. We snuck out of class, saying we both had to go to the bathroom. And I realized that even if we both had a case of violent food poisoning, we would still be taking too long. So I finally gave up. More toilet paper was going to have to do it for the rest of the day. This time, folded in layers, and not like something Derek Jeter or Jenny Finch would catch in their mitts. Fortunately, I still had my tampon bouquet from Mama. So once I got home, I could practice until I finally got the hang of it. It took about 5 years. And thank God, even if it had had real wings, there was no way a bulky pad would have flown on the Victoria's Secret runway. Scent, dent, and accident. The three ways people can tell you're on your period. And the three things you want to avoid.
Scent. When I was in junior high school, you could always tell some girls were on their periods because you could smell it. In some cultures, girls are not supposed to bathe when they're on their periods. And I respect that, but at the same time, it breaks my heart. It's hard to describe the smell of a period gone wrong, but you know it. Tyra has a term for it. But I don't want to say it. I'll let her crazy butt share it on TV someday. But knowing her, she probably already has. But in short, I told the girls at Tyra's period party that if they didn't want the world to know they were on their periods, they had to make sure to change their pads frequently and bathe every single darn day. Skipping showers while menstruating was out of the question. And I don't care how late you are for school or work. Get your booty in some water or else.
Dent. I'm sure I had this issue all the time with those ginormous pads back in the day. To me, the pads seemed as long and thick as the bread on a foot-long Subway sandwich. So I think you're kind of understanding what dent means now, right? It means that the pad is kind of sticking out and you can see it through your clothes. Especially when someone is wearing tight pants and the pad is just too long, it can look a hot mess. The situation is not as serious these days because some pads are as thin as those micro-shaved slices of turkey that they have at Subway. I don't know why I keep referring to Subway. They're not paying me. Not that they would pay me to compare their sandwiches to obsolete maxi pads. Anyway, now I'm hungry.
Accident. We all know what this one is. You bleed through your pad or tampon and it gets on your clothes. This is a junior high school girl's worst nightmare. So I told the girls to change out whatever fluid catcher they were using before it filled up and to always make sure they had plenty of pads and tampons on hand. Not every bathroom has vending machines. The lack of them should be a crime. And a lot of times when they do, they don't work. Or the pads are as thick as, remember Tara's previous sandwich bread references? You should even have enough pads and tampons to share, so that when that random, panicked woman on her first date with her future life partner comes running into the restaurant,